Welcome to the Social Network Show. How do you feel about social technology in this connected, networked world we live in? Your host of the Social Network Show, Dr. J, interviews entertaining and informative guests to tackle the most pressing digital issues of interest to business professionals and nonprofit leaders, to parents and educators, and to those wondering where all this is taking us. And now your host, experimental psychologist, Dr. Jane Karwoski.
Before I introduce my guest today, I want to tell you about a little epiphany I experienced recently at a conference session I attended, led by creativity coach Dominique Chlup. She asked us to picture having attained our chief goal, whether it was publishing the book we were working on or getting a promotion, etc., visualizing success. My response came to me quickly and clearly. I pictured knowing and interacting with my listeners, you. I pictured responding to comments on the Social Network Show blog posts, getting emails about topics listeners wanted to understand better, and recommendations for future guests. Until things like that happen, I really feel rather alone here. I also wonder if we have hit the sweet spot, balancing variety and relevance. Ideally, I'd like episodes that interest you, even when they do not directly relate to your top concerns. So let me know how I'm doing on that, too. Our email is questions@thesocialnetworkstation.com. At the same conference, I had an incredibly awesome experience. When I introduced myself to the person I had sat down by at random, she cried, "I know you. I listen to your show." At that moment, I became real, just like the Velveteen Rabbit. So a shout out to Kamalani Hurley, the force behind a Native Hawaiian writing and arts community and publication at Leeward Community College, Pearl City, Hawaii. They accept Hawaiian-themed art and written word, Olelo Hawaii, English or Pidgin. So Kamalani, thank you, and meeting you made my day. Now, on to the show. Eric Qualman is often called a digital Dale Carnegie. He is number one best-selling author and motivational keynote speaker, having spoken in 42 different countries. His book, Socialnomics, How Social Media Transforms the Way We Live and Do Business, made Amazon's number one best-selling list for the U.S., Japan, the U.K., Canada, Portugal, Italy, China, Korea, and Germany. His work has been featured on almost every media outlet, including 60 Minutes, The Wall Street Journal, Forbes, and ABC News. His latest book, What Happens in Vegas Stays on YouTube, is already being adopted by universities and companies for training purposes. And actually, that's not his latest, because it has been followed by What Happens on Campus Stays on YouTube. I'm your host, experimental psychologist Jane Karwoski, Dr. J. I'm sure you'll want to join with me in saying welcome to the Social Network Show, Eric Qualman.
Thanks, Dr. J. It's great to be here.
Eric, we've seen more and more big brands turning to social media networks as a way to augment customer service. Does that tactic seem to be working?
If you do it right, it does, for sure. It's just another access point to have a deeper relationship with your customer. And so that's why, whether it comes to mobile or social media, I always like to say it's really not about technology. It is really a relationship play. And so those companies that do it right, and a lot of that, it's not very technical to do it right. It's really just rolling up your sleeves, getting after it. It's that hard work, just like in the offline world. It's hard work to develop deep relationships, whether that's with your mother-in-law, whether that's with your customer, whether that's with your best friend. And the same holds true digitally. And so the great companies that do it well can actually really enhance their customer experience by using the mobile and social tools that are now available.
Well, how many people do you think they have working on this? Because it sounds very labor intensive if you're going to be developing relationships one by one.
Yeah, you know, it's not as much as you think. The analogy I like to use is when email first came out 20, 25 years ago. Is the companies went through the same transition process when they took a lot of the customer's care off the phone and into email. They didn't take it 100%, right? Because some people still like to talk. They have that human touch. And that's the number one thing that people get frustrated by is that they can't get a hold of a real human being, whether that's via social, whether that's mobile, whether that's on the phone, whether that's email, is that it's just that transition period right now. And so what you'll see is it'll actually save labor in terms of that customer service piece once you start to figure out how to do it right.
Okay, well, you heard me talk about how I would like to connect and engage with my listeners. Do you have any tips for me?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest tip, and this is, I just did a bunch of research with Virgin Mobile up in Canada, because they were voted, they've been up there for 10 years, they just won the J.D. Power Best Award for Best Customer Service, and so they wanted to survey their customers, who they call members at Virgin Mobile, to figure out, you know, what resonates with you, what's the most important things, and the first thing is 70% do want to have a connection with a human being, and then there's like three don't do's, right? It's number one is like, don't be rude. And some of this stuff's common sense, but common sense isn't that common when it comes to customer service or when it comes to social media. The second thing is they want to make sure the person's knowledgeable. And then third is they want it to be timely. Like, they want you to save them time. Good customer service saves your customer time. They don't want to be on the phone for an hour. And so if you can be knowledgeable, polite, and just treat me like a human being, then you're going to score very high when it comes to customer service. And when we think about that, it's kind of funny because that's not that high of a hurdle. And so to do customer service well or better than the competition, that hurdle is really not that high.
Okay, so I have heard about some companies that they have a tendency to structure this so closely. They want to make the interactions very consistent, which would be a good thing. But a lot of times it means that the human that is interacting with the customer only has so many options, and it really cuts down their ability to problem solve with the human brain. You know, sometimes they know shortcuts or things. Have you run into any of that, where you've helped a company get off of the kick of, you know, everything going by an algorithm or an instruction book, and really made it okay to be personal and human?
Yeah, no, I love that you use the word problem solving, because that's another thing that we as customers look for in terms of customer service, is the person on the other in the line of problem solver. You are starting to see companies look to Zappos, who's right in your back door. One of the things that they did was very unique, is that Tony Hsieh, the CEO and founder of Zappos, what he looked at was and said, well, you know, can I change the game here if I move $40 million out of traditional marketing, put that into customer service? Because really, I'm not in the business of selling shoes. I'm in the business of customer service. I can sell anything. It's really all about customer service. So he adjusts that. And what that allows for is that now when someone calls in to Zappos, does a couple things. One, if there's an issue that the rep can resolve that's less than $100, they don't have to talk to their manager. So that opens up a lot of capabilities. It empowers your employees. The second thing that they did is very unique, is that by doing that, all of a sudden, they can be on the call for an hour. Someone might call in, has nothing to do with shoes. The person just goes, hey, is there a pizza place that's open 24/7 in Des Moines, Iowa? And so that rep would historically probably hang up on that person. In the Zappos case, they actually answer the question. And so what they did was reversed the algorithm to where traditionally companies look at call times. So they look at get off the phone as quickly as possible because that saves us money. And you can get to the next customer. Where Tony looked at it and said, that's not what we're looking at. We're not looking at call times. We're going to look at the net promoter score. And so there's a company that looks at customer service, and it's the net promoter score is what their score is on 0 to 100. And Zappos scores off the charts high on that net promoter score because they make it a priority. It's the number one priority. They write it down actually on a whiteboard at Zappos' headquarters. And so more and more, you're starting to see companies start to understand it's not an algorithm. It's actually just that human touch and how to use that common sense.
That is an interesting thing, because social, if you're using social anything, it is easy to forget that it is social first. And to be social with people and then do your business is the way to do it. And one thing that sometimes people spend way too much time on is getting their mailing and shipping done. So getting your mailing and shipping done can seem like a no-win situation. On the one hand, going to the post office takes up valuable time. On the other, leasing a postage meter is expensive with multi-year commitments and hidden fees. Luckily, I know a better way. With Stamps.com, you buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter or package right from your desk using your own computer and printer. You even get special postage discounts you can't find at the post office. You can save up to 80% compared to a postage meter, and you'll avoid those time-consuming trips to the post office. Right now, use my promo code SOCIAL for this special offer. It's a no-risk trial plus a $110 bonus offer of a digital scale and up to $55 free postage. Don't wait. Go to Stamps.com. Before you do anything else, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in SOCIAL. That's Stamps.com. Enter SOCIAL. So that's a problem a lot of businesses have. And I don't know how Zappos handles it, but let's hope they're using stamps.com. Well, Eric, if it's primarily, you mentioned a metric they use, a promoter score.
There's a company called, they provide the net promoter score. So a lot of the Fortune 500 companies look at the net promoter score and they can see how they compare to their competition. I believe it's scaled 0 to 100. And so they can see where they stand with the competition and they get graded on their customer service. So it's a good way that companies use Net Promoter Score to improve their customer service. And like you said, as we look at like stamps.com, it's really about making sure you're having the tools work for you rather than you working for the tools. And stamps.com is a great example to where it can be a time saver so you can port that time back into your customer service. But yeah, Zappos is looking at, they use a tool called Net Promoter Score that gives them a benchmark of how they're doing versus themselves over time, but on a day-to-day basis, actually, but also how do they compare to the competition?
Does that company actually survey customers, or how do they get their data?
You know, I think they do it through a traditional survey, so they have a large fans out there, and then they survey them and give that score. I know it's on a daily basis, because Zappos is looking at it daily.
So are there any other ideas you have about how to get the social into customer service?
Yeah, no, one thing it allows for is it's never been possible before is to surprise and delight your customer. And so you can actually listen for those conversations and those key terms that are out there. And then you can reach out to those people. So like, for example, there's the famous wheat thins where they saw this lady had posted on Twitter, I'm out of wheat thins, my life's officially over. And then they reach out to them.
Okay, well, that's a great idea. We're talking with Eric Qualman, and this is Dr. J of the Social Network Show. In the next section, we're going to talk more about, I want to hear more about that surprise and delight your customer. So look forward to that in our second half.
Questions? Comments? Email us at questions@thesocialnetworkshow.com. Now, back to the Social Network Show.
Welcome back to the Social Network Show, where we are speaking with Eric Qualman. He's the author of A Socialnomics, How Social Media Transforms the Way We Live and Do Business, and that was a huge bestseller. And we're going to talk a little bit more about his newest version of What Happens on Campus this time stays on YouTube, just like his previous book, What Happens in Vegas, stays on YouTube. But first, back to the surprise and delight idea. Eric, you're saying that if they're watching, for instance, Facebook or Twitter or any of the social media platforms, that they can spot something a customer says and respond to it. Did I understand that right?
No, you're exactly right. And so the wheat thins example I was given was on Twitter. This young lady posted, I'm out of wheat thins. My life is officially over. I know all of us on the radio are probably thinking, man, we wish we had her life if that's a tough day. But what they did was they saw that, and then they showed up with a pallet, like a giant, there must have been 1,000 boxes of wheat thins. And then knocked on her door and said, hey, we saw your tweet. We hope this solves the issue. Boom. Just like drop the microphone. Here's a pallet of wheat thins. And they took off. And so they're able to film it. So the way to surprise and delight. And then the video goes viral, right? Because it's pretty funny.
Right. So to go on to our next topic, we dealt with your book in a previous episode on What Happens in Vegas Stays on YouTube. And I recommend that book to anyone who wants to spread the word on online safety and how to manage your reputation online. So the digital reputation, that is a problem or an issue, let's say something we need to deal with in the college years on campus. What points did you talk about in the campus version?
Yeah, in the campus version, this is an example of Surprises of Light as well, is that over 200 universities use my books. So what I do is I listen for chatter, whether they're around hashtags that relate to that class, because a lot of classes at the college level use a hashtag, like hashtag journalism, SDSU for San Diego State University, or it might be COM131. But anyways, I'm able to see these conversations, and often I'll surprise them to light and send a note in or go, hey, I can Skype in your class that you use in the book. Now, when I started Skyping the classes, I started to realize that they had a need at the reputation level for the college students. It wasn't like a surprise that they needed it, but what they needed was not someone to come down and say, don't do this, don't do that. It was really for us to design the book, much like we did for the Vegas book, and that's why I was nominated for the Pulitzer Prize, is that we adjusted it for the campus level. And so 70% of it's the same, but the 30% adjustment is really, we talked a little bit more about cyberbullying. We dug a little bit more into sexual harassment and tried to use these tools to help curb that issue. But that was the main impetus of changing the book to the campus version. And that's why we're signing these large partnerships. Like University of Rutgers just gave 7,500 copies to all their incoming freshmen. NCAA, we've got a huge partnership with them, ACPA. So on and on down the line. So it's been really eye-opening, and it's been a great experience for me to really be able to impact these students to understand that it's really about producing your best digital reputation and then protecting it. So it's both of it, not just the protection piece. If you actually produce it, you can actually help you get yourself a job, you know, get your career started, help your future, and then how to protect your best digital reputation.
That's an excellent idea. Our previous guest, Alan Katzman, he has the business socialassurity.com, and that's his main message, too, is be proactive. Go and be active on social media and social networks. Make sure it's positive and shows you in your best light, because then when whether it is a job application or a college application or anything, it is going to reflect favorably on you, and you won't have to be afraid of it. It's going to be an asset.
Huge asset. 86% of people that get a job, it's based on what people found. It's what the job hunter found about you online. So 86% get a job. It's influenced and affected in a positive manner by what was discovered online. A lot of us like to think about the negative side, but there's a huge positive side to make sure you're developing your own reputation out there.
Are there any particular chapters? You mentioned the sexual harassment. Of course, that's been a big issue on campuses lately about the number of rapes and improper sexual conduct, etc. So does this tie in somehow if you're teaching and raising consciousness about your social media, your digital reputation, and what happens in the face-to-face world?
It does. I mean, it gets really complex really quick when we're talking about universities, trying to figure out when do they act like the police, when do they don't, what's their responsibility, what's not. But to simplify it, and I've heard this from student affairs professionals that know much better than I do when we interviewed them for the book, we actually had four from the ACPA Digital Task Force help us. And they said, look, this stuff gets complex, but at the end of the day, all you have to do is ask a simple question. What's in the best interest of the student? And then that simplifies all answers. And when it comes to digital and these digital tools, use the technology, right? Now you can, cyberbullying is an issue, but also one of the upsides of cyberbullying is it does leave a trail. So it's much easier in the court of law to press charges. It's much easier to see. So at the simplest level, one of the rules is be an upstander, not a bystander. Mm. So it's really conveying to all students and really all parents and all people that when you see something wrong in life, now don't put yourself in danger, but can you step in and prevent it? If not, can you record it?
Right. Ah, now there's a I thought turning that the prevalence of phone taken videos, photos, and so forth, making that a law enforcement assist. And of course, those are pretty incriminating for people that are perpetrators of crimes and wrongdoing.
It's interesting because, like, you see it, like if a team wins a championship or loses, and all of a sudden there's rioting on campus, is that these students can now be digital deputies. And we've seen it occur where they do film the rioters. Mm-hmm. And often what's the case, because they love their school, right? Mm. What's often the case, what they've discovered, is a lot of the looters are not students. They're actually mm-hmm. from the town. And mm-hmm. so by helping that out, they're helping the university.
Mm, right. In the case of the fraternity that got in a lot of hot water, and rightfully so, for their racist attitudes in at least one chapter, that was another case of a video having been taken that, well, it's hard to get out of it when you're seeing it recorded.
No, you're right. At the University of Oklahoma, that definitely occurred with the freshman on the bus at the fraternity. And so, you know, that's the impetus behind why we adjusted the Vegas book to be campus, to try to be proactive, to help these 18 to 22-year-olds out, is to help them be proactive with, when it comes to this stuff, to understand this is a new world, and this is how stuff is perceived, and so you can't just behave in this manner. It's always going to be filmed.
How do you think that the combination of, I guess I would say, old media is as compared to new media works out? Because I know for yourself, you've spent time recently on media, news shows and so forth, especially in Canada. You said the morning shows. Was that TV or radio or both?
Yeah, it was both radio, television, and also newspaper. And what I lead everything off of when I'm on stage performing is I like to tell people, look, you're looking at me, you're going, this guy's only going to talk about digital. I go, that's the last thing. That's the worst thing you can do. It's a combination of both offline and online. You cannot replace face-to-face. These tools are designed to augment it when time and distance are an issue. So some companies don't embrace this stuff fast enough. That's a lot of the news. Some companies go a little too far. They go into what I call bleeding edge instead of cutting edge. And they go full force in the digital, and they lose the offline piece, which, again, you lose a little bit of that human touch. And so it's really the most powerful individuals and companies understand that balance between the online and the offline. It's a mix.
Okay. And how do you know when you're hitting that proper combination?
That is where the billion-dollar question is. And so that's where most leaders that excel, it's based on their EQ, their emotional quotient, how they can relate to, how basically they can read a room versus your IQ. That's why uh-huh. most top performing CEOs index more likely at a high EQ than a high IQ, because they can understand that interpersonal communication. And so a lot of this stuff, there is no algorithm. There's people that get paid a lot of money to give you this. Here's the rote formula. Mm-hmm. Give steps. That's what I like to do. Here's five habits that are going to help you have success. Just like the question, how do you make something go viral? I'm like, here's a couple steps that will give you a better chance to go viral. But obviously, if I had the formula for this, then I would be a multi-gazillionaire, because everything I touch would be viral. And so while I've had some viral successes, here's some failures. Here's stuff that'll give you at least a chance for it to go viral. So that was kind of a segue there, but it's similar uh-huh. questions in terms of there is no rote formula. People that do tell you there is one, you know, run for the hills. They're just trying to gold dig for some money.
And there's a lot of those, aren't there? There's just so many people that are actually, that's their business, is as an expert on whether it's social media or customer service or whatever. And you can learn some things from anybody, I think, that is doing that. But at the same time, you have to be a little careful. What do you think are maybe some red flags when you're looking at consultants or people who are in the business of hopefully helping those do things the right way? What I've noticed is that there's a lot of different opinions out there, and you kind of, anyway, do you have any thoughts on what to look for when you're seeking someone to help you with all this business of social?
Yeah, no, I mean, whether it's social, whether it's search, whether it's mobile, whether it's big data, the things you should always do is obviously look for recommendations from people you know. And I'm writing a book on ratings right now, trying to figure out exactly why people get 4 and 5 stars versus those that get 1 and 2 stars.
Okay.
But everything in time is going to be rated, including we're already getting ratings on consultants and coaches. And so what I always do is obviously try to get referrals from people that you know, then get referrals from them. They're going to give you the ones that they know are good. But those always help because sometimes you'll get someone on the phone and you can dig in and maybe it's not a good fit for you.
Yeah.
Other things you need to look out for is whenever you hear the word guaranteed, now it's okay if they guarantee your money back. That's okay. But let's say search engine optimization is they say we're going to get you guaranteed number one placement. That's when you got to go, okay, maybe a red flag. Or what you can do is look and what's their business, right? Their business might be that they're search engine marketers. It's like, well, you're not number one when I type in search engine marketers. So then if they ever say the word like, oh yeah, it's the cobbler, and that's an old term, but it's the shoemaker, daughter and son that don't have any shoes. Whenever they say that, that's also be careful of that. You know, check them out. So how do they perform for their own company when it comes to what they're going to consult and coach you on?
Excellent. Yeah, that's a big help. Well, Eric, it's so much fun to talk with you again. Thank you so much for making time for us, and we appreciate your being on the Social Network Show.
That was an honor. Thank you so much, Dr. J. I appreciate it. And thank you to all the listeners out there. I really appreciate your time and energy. Really, really, really keeps us going.
You're welcome, and thank you again. And many thanks to you, our listener, for joining us today. Please also give a listen to 50shows.com. Visit the site, and you will hear women worldwide. You can also find them on the socialnetworkstation.com. Women Worldwide tells about women with dreams to live and those who have accomplished some of them. And Deirdre Breckenridge is the head of that show and will entertain you and edify you at the same time. If you are listening by way of iTunes, please add us to your playlist, subscribe to the show, and please recommend us to your friends. Please have fun and be safe online and off until we welcome you here again.
You've been listening to The Social Network Show, the only worldwide show dedicated to social networking and social media. Listen to archived shows and follow us on Twitter. The views expressed on The Social Network Show are those of the hosts and guests and may not be the views of Social Network Intermedia. The Social Network Show is produced by Social Network Intermedia, copyright 2012.